Good evening, ladies and gentlemen, if you're listening live. This is John Johnson in Radio Edge Talk. I am sitting in Glasgow, and tonight I'm delighted and excited to have a wee preview of the ALT annual conference with, I think, quite a lot of distinguished guests in the room. We've got Mirren, blown it again, Deepwell, Sheila McNeil, Martin Hoxie and Martin Weller. So four people here with me, so please maybe forgive for slightly more ums and ahs or dead air than usual, because we can't see each other and it's hard to know when people are coming in. So maybe we could start just by going round and giving you a sort of brief who you are, what you do and your relation to ALT. Would that be reasonable? Sheila, could we maybe start with you?
Absolutely. Hi, John. Yeah, that sounds great. So my name's Sheila McNeil. I'm the current chair of ALT. And this year, along with Martin Weller, I'm the co-chair of our annual conference. When I'm not being chair of ALT in my everyday job, I'm a senior lecturer in digital learning at Glasgow Caledonian University. And will I pass over to my co-chair, Martin Weller, now?
Thanks, Sheila. So I'm Martin Weller, and as Sheila said, I'm co-chair in the conference this year, which isn't usual. I'm sure Mirren will explain later. We don't usually have the people of ALT chair in the conference. So I'm also the president of ALT, having been chair last year. And when I'm not doing ALT things, I'm a professor of education technology at the Open University. And I'll pass over to, it's like a hot potato, Mirren.
Thanks, Martin. So, hello, I'm Mirren Deepwell, and I'm the chief executive of ALT, and I do that 4 days a week. So in the rest of my free time, I work as a learning technologist, trying out to keep my hands on some practical work as well. And for the conference this year, as well as leading the team that organizes it, together with over 100 volunteers this year, I'm also going to be giving a keynote, which I'm really excited about. And I think I'm going to hand over to our final guest this evening.
Hi, John. So my name is Martin Hoxie. I work for the Association for Learning Technologies, Chief Innovation Community and Technology Officer, which means I get to do a lot of the technology governance that we have as part of the association. I'm not a trustee of ALT, and I'm not giving a keynote either.
Such a shame, but you are deeply involved, Martin.
The little person here.
we'll get to that later. So, just, I'm guessing most people who are listening or will listen to the podcast will know what ALT's in, but just to sort of give this some logic, maybe we could ask somebody to explain what ALT is, and then Sheila, maybe you could go into the introduction about the conference in general.
Well, I think, John, what ALT is probably my job description. So I think everyone else will be breathing a sigh of relief because they don't have to give the definition. But ALT is the Association for Learning Technology, and we're celebrating 25 years this year as the leading independent professional body for learning technology professionals all across the UK. We have, I think, between 3,500 and 4,000 members and growing very rapidly from all sectors of education. So we work with members from higher education, further education, schools, work-based learning, offender learning, and industry. We organize and create a lot of activities all through the year led by our members. But I think it's fair to say that our annual conference is the largest event of our year. And I think with that, I'm going to hand over to Sheila to tell you all about what's coming up in September.
Thanks, Mirren. Well, as Mirren said, this year is quite a special year for the organisation. We're 25 years young, as I would say. So this year, we've decided to take a slightly different approach to the conference. We normally have co-chairs who send in proposals and really kind of run the conference their way. But this year we felt, because it was our 25th anniversary, that it would be very timely for the Board of Trustees to be a bit more involved and to use this year as part of kind of a reflection on where we've been, but more importantly, where we are now and where we're going in hopefully the next 25 years and more. So the trustees have been very involved this year in organising the conference and the conference themes, and it's really about our community. It's really a celebration of everyone who's involved in the community. And there's been quite a lot happening over the last couple of years within ALT itself. I think as an organisation, we've really moved forward. We're now a completely independent organisation. We've developed and launched a new strategy under Martin Weller's chairship last year. So we have a lot of a new set of guiding principles. We're very committed to open education, but really we're committed to our members, because our members are what make ALT, and that's what we want to support. And I think as trustees, we are all, you know, we all feel a sense of, I think, huge privilege being on the board of Trustees for ALT. But we serve our community. We want to make sure that the organisation reflects our community, is pushing forward research and learning technology, but also providing a really secure, independent voice for technology, which I think in this day and age is increasingly important. And it's great that the organisation, the association, is being increasingly recognised by governments in the UK and beyond. So this year is going to be really exciting. There's lots of things happening. There's still the traditional things. If you've been to the ALT conference before, there will still be all the things that everyone knows and loves. But it's just slightly different this year, and we're very excited about that. So I'll maybe pass over to my co-chair, Martin, if he wants to add the myriad of things that I've forgotten to say.
No, I think you've covered it. So, yes, celebrating the 25 years, but it's not just about looking backwards. It's also about looking forward as well. So it's not a kind of a nostalgia fest, but we've got some very exciting keynotes. Shall I mention the keynotes now? Let's do the keynotes. So we've got Tressie Cottom from the US. If you don't know Tressie, she's a big star in the US. Very excited about Tressie coming over to speak. She's excellent. You should follow her on Twitter and read her book. Laura Red as well. So she'll be an excellent speaker. We've got Amber Thomas, who many of you will know, a kind of very active practitioner in the ALT community, and someone called Maren Deepwell as well. Is a teenager for us. So, I ought to say, Sheila and I persuaded Maren to keynote. She didn't, so I demand to keynote the conference. But we thought, as it was 25 years, we'd be fitting to kind of hear from the ALT CEO to her reflections on the community and edtech and things like that. So that's where we are now.
That sounds great. And as chairs, have you been sort of corralling? Because looking at the website, you've got, I think, 3 days of talks and people talking. I don't know how many that adds up to, but has it been your job to corral that? And what's it
well, like? We're very lucky that the ALT core team led by Maren and Martin do a huge amount of work in terms of organisation for the conference. But we also have a conference committee, and we have over 100 volunteers from our community who've been involved reviewing the papers. We've had conference calls every month. And so there's a lot of work. So, yes, there's a lot done by ALT itself. And I should say at this point, we have quite a small core team in ALT as well. But I'll let Maren and Martin talk a bit more about that. But, yes, we have, in terms of the community, we have a conference committee. And they've been very active in the run-up to the conference. They'll be very active at the conference. Not only will many of them be presenting, but a lot of them will be chairing the sessions as well. So it really is a combination of a huge amount of community work to get the conference to where it is. Maren, I don't know if you want to add any more to that.
Thanks, Sheila. Yeah, I think there is a couple of things to mention. One is, as you said, that our conference committee is very active, and as well as looking after the academic peer review process, which this year we're very proudly facilitating for a new submission system that Martin Hawksey has developed, and then I think openly released back into the community, so other others can use it for their conferences as well. So we've been kind of innovating on the fly. I'm saying we, but it's a well, royal we that refers to him. And also, I think we've had a lot of support this year from our sponsors and exhibitors who've, I think, very early on stepped in and really started supporting the conference from an industry perspective, which, as Sheila pointed out, it's really important for us to maintain the dialogue between industry and practitioners, kind of really have informed debate and discussion. But I think one part that I wanted to mention in regards to the conference overall, and John, I think really links to our desire to retain an independent voice in learning technology, is that really one of the key themes that Sheila and Martin and the trustees have come up with this year is really to look at critical perspectives on learning technology. So as Martin Uller said, it's not necessarily looking backwards or just celebratory. We are proud of what we've achieved in 25 years, but we are really feeling we're in an age where critical approaches to learning technology are becoming more and more important. And I think that's reflected in the work of the volunteers that have helped shape the program.
So do you see the sort of focus of ALT as in, maybe in the earlier years has been more positive towards technology and now moving to more evaluative, I guess, position?
I think, John, that's probably just a natural progression. Mm-hmm. And I think that reflects our community. We have a very self-reflective community who look at things with an informed sense of critique, but it's constructive criticism, I think, that we're looking at, and looking at research and developing, that body of knowledge, which, our journal exemplifies as well. So we've got a growing research body of research that, everyone can draw on in the community and beyond. But I think that's just a natural progression. Mm. And I think we as practitioners are best placed to give that kind of critical reflection on how technology impacts on education. And as Maren said, I think particularly in the age that we're living in just now, that we need to be critically reflecting what's happening in wider society, because there are a lot of forces that are have a huge influence on the shape of education, and the political the political and I suppose industry tensions that we have to deal with. I think we are really well placed to have a critical view on that and share the narrative of our community back to the rest of society.
If I just might come back in there, John, one of the things I wanted to highlight was some practical examples of how I see this kind of more critical perspective being articulated in the programme. And there are a couple of examples of sessions I just wanted to highlight that are being live streamed. So even if you aren't able to come to Manchester and be at the conference, you can still take part in these sessions. One of them is called A Personal Feminist and Critical Retrospective of Learning and Technology, 1994 to 2018. And that session is going to be on Tuesday afternoon, the 11th of September, led by Frances Bell and Catherine Cronin, where they are going to be sharing their personal histories in education and technology, and through that lens, look at a critical reflection of a feminist perspective. And similarly, also on Tuesday afternoon, Melissa Heighton is leading, I think, what sounds like a really inspiring session called Next Expect Locusts, Dealing with Relationship Breakdowns. And Melissa is bravely stepping really into the limelight as a leader in this conference, talking about some of the really thorny issues that are we being tested by, including strikes, snow and sedition, as she puts it, and asks us to reflect on what we can best learn from critical incidents. So I think those are just two examples of, I think, what's going to be a really varied programme, but those are highlights that I'm looking forward to.
And maybe that's the time to sort of think about from other people and the themes, I guess, around the conference this time is this idea of a critical perspective. You've got this participation. And I'm kind of interested because this is working in partnership with learners It's just quite an exciting idea, I think. You've got general collaboration. There's a theme of openness and a wild card theme. So I'd be interested to hear if any of these sort of just anything they're looking forward to, or something that exemplifies some of these.
Oh yeah, I was just waiting. Sorry, that was one of those kind of cues. I think we're probably all waiting for someone else to speak. I am. I'm excited by practically everything in the program. But one of the things that we're trying for the first, well, we're introducing for the first time this year, it comes from our colleagues in Ireland, and it's the Gasta session. So that's kind of more shorter, more provocative. Mini presentations, and there's going to be a lot of participation from the audience, but I think probably both Martins and Maren can explain that better than me, because they've participated in that at our sort of sister associations conference in Ireland earlier this year and the previous year. So there's that, but I think that's a highlight for me. But I think obviously I'm looking forward to the keynotes, but yeah, I think it's quite difficult to point out one or two things. I'm just really excited about everything. I'm just very excited just now in general.
I know it's a horrible question, you know, will you pick something interesting out of this, but it doesn't need to be the most exciting. But I think it's just, I mean, I'm just looking at one because I'm attracted to alliteration, Witchcraft to Wonder, which is quite a good title, if nothing else. My journey with empowering staff with technology, and I think anything with witchcraft in it sounds as if it would be interesting, but I don't know. So it's more just something that would give people a sort of flavour rather than this is the best.
Well, maybe
while
go on.
Well, this is the thing about the annual conference, is that even that with themes, there's such a diversity in terms of what people are bringing to the conference in terms of research and practice that you can't help but stumble into some wonderful sessions where people are doing incredible things with learners quite often, looking at as well at scale, looking at the institution as a whole, so looking at the policy level. So I think there's a real kind of melting pot of stuff, which I think, at the danger of sounding cliched, generally means there's something for everyone. So whoever takes your fancy, you can probably find, half a dozen sessions. I was, we had a potential exhibitor who had some voice recording application. And to try and get them on board as an exhibitor, I thought, right, I'll have a look through the program and I'll just send you a list of stuff. And I was only expecting to find maybe one or two things, but I came up with six different sessions that kind of fitted in with their interests. And that was quite a niche area. So I think there's a lot for everyone.
Okay.
I've deflected that question there.
Yeah, that was well done.
You can thank me off later. One thing I find quite fascinating is that for those, I've got a kind of a little bit of an interest in the history of computer science, and so if you go back into the annuals to 1993, one of the kind of critical things that was released in 1993 was Mosaic, which was the first widely used web browser. And obviously learning technology isn't just the web browser, but it's really interesting to consider just how the web browser has changed learning and teaching. And I think that reflects as well in terms of how we delivered the conference. So, we've talked about some of the sessions that we're doing live feeds from, which we do for free, and it costs us our time to do as well, because we can do that free from YouTube. Obviously Google are making money somewhere along the way to provide that service, But we also have our we're reforming our social media band with Lorna Campbell and Rich Goodman, who've been with us for the last couple of years at the conference volunteering their social media efforts. So, you know, what we do in Manchester, we try and make it reach as far as possible. And I think it's really interesting to reflect on my own experience of, you know, in 1993. I was sitting in Tain Royal Academy in the suite of Max, not really connected to the world, but it's completely different now. Quite easily, with a couple of clicks of a button, you could be talking to someone somewhere completely different in the world. And my daughter has a pen friend in Spain, and it's part of their classes. They're doing Skype calls and all this sort of thing. So it's quite interesting to think how the technology has changed in the last 25 years.
So that probably gives a wee into the other Martin, because one of the things you're talking about is you've just finished, I guess, a series of blog posts. I'm guessing it's to fit in with all on the last 25 years. And although you said you didn't really want to look back, it's maybe worth just breezing over some of the key points, you think, that have happened in the last 25 years that maybe will then go on to what happens next.
Yeah, sure. Because I'm not good at maths, it's ended up being 26 years. I went back 25 years to 1993. We did that year and this year, so 26 years in the end. But what I did, I picked out a kind of key technology for each year. And it wasn't necessarily like when it was invented, just kind of when I felt it became relevant and interesting for educational technology. And I think, although it isn't just for the kind of historical nerdiness of it or just going back, I think it's quite important in a way, because I think particularly in education technology, and particularly from, for want of a better phrase, the kind of Silicon Valley approach to it, we often see this kind of year zero mentality, like, hey, people, we've invented online learning. I mean, the amount of times I've seen online learning invented, you think, really? So I think it's important to kind of know where this stuff comes from. And it's not just for accuracy, but also that quite often, you know, we've learned lessons in the past that are actually quite useful. And then you see people learning the same lessons all over again. So I think kind of having some understanding of this is important. But also, I think you begin to see some kind of themes that kind of recur often. So, and Audrey Waters writes about this very well as well. But things like, my first entry was in 93, was artificial intelligence. And I sort of just finished doing a PhD in that then. And it was quite a big topic. But by the end of the 90s, it had really faded in education, because they hadn't realised the goals that people had planned for it. At the time, they were saying, oh, within a couple of years, we'll be getting rid of teachers, we'll be having these automatic intelligent tutoring systems. And guess what? It was more complicated than they thought. But then I revisited that a couple of years ago. It's like, and actually, it's the same claims being made for AI. And of course, AI has got better along the way. But it's the same kind of dreams almost of like removing people from education. I think you see this a lot in a lot of books. I think it's the same for MOOCs. So I think it's interesting to kind of go back and look at those and think, what were the lessons we learned from some of those? You know, why did some of them not take off as much as we might have thought? And why have some persisted and some had peaks and died? You know, it's like, so one of my is Second Life, you know, it's like, and if you go to, remember when universities were invested in Second Life islands, and now they're just like these barren wastelands you can go and walk around. But so why did Second Life not take off, and is there anything we can learn from that from other things as well? I think it's interesting. So yeah, so it's not just a kind of historical pedantry, although it is quite a lot of that as well, I think. But I think it's quite an interesting way to explore where we are now.
And Marin, you then, so I don't know if it sequentially, but took up that torch and went into the next 25 years. And I'm just kind of interested in the sorts of things that are in the conference. Do you think those themes will still be running in 25 years' time? And in the same way, do you think we'll just be having these recurring and another 25 years we'll be taking another pass at AI?
That's a good question, John. I think I had a good idea in that I jumped 25 years to 2043. So I skipped the 25 blog posts in the middle and I went straight for the one at the end. So, but Martin Weller's series really inspired me, because when I started working for ALT, I realized that we were having the same conversations over and over again that were around, you know, do we have evidence that this makes a difference? Is it really a good thing to be using technology? Do we really need to change? Can we just ignore this? Will it go away? Can we just save lots of money? Like the sort of the rationales for not adapting to a very rapidly changing landscape that continues to change and challenge us. There's so many reasons why we shouldn't be adapting, because it's difficult and it takes time, and real change with people requires so much effort that it would be so nice if there was like a quick fix, and ideally in a shiny gadget, and as Martin Weller said, in a Silicon Valley kind of narrative, something that you can subscribe and buy and, you know, get off the shelf and fixes all of your problems. But I think what one thing that I've come to realize working for ALP in lots of different sectors and with many different professionals is that there just isn't that solution. And to me, it seemed like there was a recurring question of when we were finally going to arrive at this promised kind of edtech future where everything was going to be, you know, on a tidy dashboard and we would have all the answers. And when we just, you know, we got there like a long time ago, and we just changed our milestones again and again, so we never really arrived. And I think that's a really good place to be, because it means that, you know, we're not standing still. We keep trying harder for our learners, for our colleagues, for our institutions, and we do adapt. And I think that's real. That's what we need to be doing, rather than hoping that we arrive somewhere. But I do have some concerns about whether we are, by looking constantly for the solution in the future, whether we are, you know, avoiding some of the really hard questions around how we use technology responsibly and the ethical implications of learning technology, whether we're maybe avoiding some of those by looking for new solutions all of the time. So my post, which was quite short and a bit more off the cuff than Martin's series, it's more around trying to think about the values that I hope we would still have in 25 years, and that we would still value critical debate and an independent voice rather than giving that up. And I think one of the things that inspires me to write and to work, and particularly in the conference run-up when we're really busy, is to actually read other people's voices. And we collate on the conference platform all the blog posts that people write. And I think there's already dozens out there now, and the conference hasn't even started yet. And if you tag them with our hashtag, ALTC, then we'll include that in the list. And it's great to hear all these different voices. And I think that's the dialogue that I really find inspiring. And that's what I'm hoping we will still have. So I know that sounds maybe a little bit sort of general, but I do think that's what really adds value to our understanding of learning technology as it develops. But I wonder whether maybe Martin Weller has any reflections on that, because I know he's been reading some of these blog posts as well, and his series tops the list of our contributors this year.
Yeah, pass it back.
Well, if you want to, I mean, I'm quite happy just to add a little thing to give you a bit more time to think about that, Martin. Just listening to you both, I think one of the things for me that's always really important, and why I'm, and part of my kind of, I suppose, my main mission as chair this year is to really focus on our community, because I think what so often gets forgotten about in discussions and around technology are people, you know, and we make things work. We make the technology work. If it doesn't work, it's largely down to us and how we're using things as well. And I think that's where, you know, in the past 25 years, I think that's why ALT is still here, because fundamentally, ALT is not actually about technology. It's about people. It's about our community. So I really hope that is almost just echoing what Maren said there. But the heart of what we do is how we all work with technology, and how we have informed debate and share that amongst ourselves. And obviously being within education, you know, how we filter that out to wider society as well. And we have a hugely important role in doing that, but we mustn't forget people. And I think for everyone, that is particularly just now, that is one, you know, Martin talking about these, well, we're just going to invent things that will reinvent what we already know. We're always looking for technological solutions, and why aren't we looking for human solutions as well? I was at a conference yesterday and we were talking about AI and data, and there was a really great quote that someone said, we don't actually have AI just now. All we have are fancy statistics. So I thought that was quite good. But, you know, we can't forget about people, and our community is really at the heart of what we do. So I'm going to pass back to Martin now.
Okay, thanks for the the breather. I think it comes back to that point that Mara was talking about, kind of around criticality, and I think that's, it's difficult to get that balance right. I think sometimes when people are coming, particularly with Alt-C, I think we tend to get a mixture of people. Some people, it's often it's their first time Alt-C, and other people are kind of old laggards like myself who've been in all the time. And I think getting that mixture, sometimes people come in with kind of really enthusiastic technology. So getting that balance right between practical implementations that are helpful for students and for learners, and being enthusiastic about those implementations, and also a kind of critical approach, being aware of, you know, what the implications might be for students, what we're doing with data and some things. Getting that balance right is quite tricky sometimes. I think sometimes you don't either want to be too kind of gung-ho and technology wow kind of and uncritical, but equally you don't just want to be a technology bashing kind of conference or vibe. So I think Alt's kind of over the years, I think it's really kind of got that balance quite right, I think. And if, I think if you went back 10 years or more, it would be more of the kind of advocacy and, you know, technology is going to make everything wonderful, and now it's not so much that it's dismissing technology, but it's saying, okay, here's evidence for what actually works, here's research that's grounded, here's practical ways it can be used, these are some of the issues, these are some of the implications that you might think about. I think that's a very nuanced picture now, I think, and often you're seeing that in a lot of the posts that come through. I think
as well, the conference, like, you know, many other conferences, it's an opportunity for you to meet and, you know, just gain that little bit extra knowledge that you need, or that new connection with someone that you didn't know of before, and just kind of build your own personal, you know, knowledge and capital. I didn't write as much as Martin Miller in terms of the build up to the conference. I wrote one post, which is probably a paragraph long, but my reflection from the old I think it was in 2009, Joss Wynn, who was doing a session on Buddy Press, which I know, John, you know quite well, and it was fantastic to see Joss present his work. And it was that kind of stepping stone I needed in terms of my own knowledge around WordPress and BuddyPress that just kind of kickstarted a whole avenue of interest and thought and exploration that I probably wouldn't have ever gone down if I had not gone to that session that Joss had given. And I think what really kind of brought it home was Joss and I ended up chatting to each other in the corridor at the conference, but we were opposite ends of the corridor. We were chatting online about his work. It just kind of shows you, you know, and, you know, I've connected to Joss many times since then, and occasionally we get to actually meet. I think it's, you know, the conference is, you know, it's a focus point for kind of you know, it's like a nuclear reactor that sometimes certain bits come together at the right point, and little explosions can happen, and there's lots of energy and excitement as a result.
That wee story kind of fits in with something I was thinking there, because one of the obvious powerful things about a conference is the face-to-face and the, you know, hanging about in the corridors and the coffee bar and whatever. But your experience was actually online. You could have done that if you had watched the thing on YouTube, I guess, and then jumped into a chat or something. So I'm guessing everybody feels pretty strongly that it's still worth doing face-to-face. But is technology beginning to erode that, do you think? Is it getting good enough?
I think it's really complementing it, actually. Sorry, John. I mean, for example, we're trying to extend the conference and open it up to people who can't come. Obviously, I mean, face-to-face is fantastic. But as Martin's example exemplified, you know, there's that online element. So as well as, you know, the live streaming of the keynotes and a number of the sessions and the Twitter stream. For example, our AltSig in Northern Ireland, they're having their own little mini alt in Belfast, so that people who can't get to the conference can be together, but they're going to hook into the live stream, etc. There, we're also hooking up with the Virtually Connecting crowd again, so they go around. That's a virtually, as it said, you know what it says on the tin, is a way to have those kind of corridor conversations for people all over the world who can't make the conference. So that's another way that we're extending and complementing the face-to-face, I suppose, serendipitous moments when you have those conversations or you're able to talk to somebody. So I see it very much as going hand in hand. I don't think one will ever replace the other, but I think there's a shifting dynamic that is just, again, I keep going back to community, but I think that really strengthens the sense of community.
Yeah, I'd echo that, and I was going to make the plug of Virtually Connecting as well. I think it's a really good example of how the two kind of reinforce each other, and I think that meeting face-to-face is great. You know, it's like when you get to go to the bar or, you know, a coffee room and have chats, and there's kind of informal discussions, but I noticed a real change from when I used to go to Walt kind of pre-social media, like, and you'd sort of stand in the corner with just a couple of people you knew, maybe from your own university. Then when you start going kind of post-Twitter, there's all these people you suddenly knew, and you were sort of like, if not exactly high-fiving your way down the corridor, God, at least you were bumming, oh, you're so-and-so, oh, we're just being chatting today. You know, it's like, I think, and it really made it a much better face-to-face social event as well for me, I think. So I think those two things reinforce each other, and yeah, and I think that a lot of people, sometimes conferences are kind of scared to do too much of the online stuff, so they think it will devalue the face-to-face experience, but I think it works. It actually just reinforces it as well. It makes people want to be there, and that, you know, when people say, well, I saw some of the stuff online last year and I really wanted to come this year.
And you can also never underestimate the being forced into a room to watch three presentations and you only want to be there for one, but actually all three are really good moment. you can't really get that, I think. It's because we do an online winter conference, and it follows a similar format, but you have to be really hardcore if you're going to do the 2 or 3 days of just watching live streams. So I think even with advances in video streaming and various other technologies, I think you still can't be actually being there. But I think there's definitely ways that we can use the technology to supplement it and extend the reach for the people that can't be at the conference for whatever reason.
Yeah, I think that kind of fits in with the current discussions over all sorts of technology about the sort of quality of attention, depending on the medium. And maybe at live you've got a different feeling. The person who you're listening to is looking at you, or you're in their eyesight and things. I think there's something there that's interesting. Compared to listening to a podcast while you're washing the dishes or driving, has a wee bit of, you have permission to turn off or, you know, pay attention to the accident or the deer beside the road or something like that.
I think maybe one thought that I had is, this is actually the first time that we as an organization have organized the conference as a virtual organization, because we no longer have a physical space where we're all co-located. And ALT's been operating on a blended model, with some of us being distributed across the UK and some of us being office-based for a few years. And earlier this year, we went to make a transition to use our resources even better and more efficiently, and try and serve our membership all across the UK better, so that now we have members of staff working from home all over the country. And for me, we still meet up as a staff team 4 times a year, and it's really important to us that we meet together. And Martin Hawkes and I, we've been blogging about our experience on a monthly basis, and it's been interesting to reflect on how our work as learning technologists and our work running the organization coincides. And I think, John, you're really right. There are different quality of engagement that you get from face-to-face, but I also think it's about showing the world who we are and what we do, and that we're proud of the achievements within our community. And Sheila mentioned earlier that we have a lot of research now, and we do have a body of evidence stretching back 25 years. Martin Weller chaired a panel this year for the first research project in learning technology of the year awards. And I think for us, it's really important to, you know, show our colors and to make our voices heard and show people who we are as a professional body, and all the people who are achieving things, from, you know, students who are giving their first presentation to professors who are, you know, sharing their recent research or their newest book. I think it's really important to remind people that, as Sheila said, it's not just about the technology, it's about learning technology, and that always involves people. So I really hope that we won't go and have a fully virtual everything model in the future. I think it's really important for us to meet up face to face and to work together and to communicate properly.
Yeah, that sounds a very positive note. I'm feeling we're kind of getting towards rounding this up. It's hard to tell when we can't see face to face and things, but this is a problem we're talking about. But I don't know if Martin Hoxie, you want to talk a wee bit more about what's going out and where and how people can participate that maybe are not coming to the conference, or...
Yeah, sure. So all the conference session descriptions are online. So if you go to altc.alt.ac.uk/2018, or just Google Alt Annual Conference 2018, I'm pretty sure you'll end up on that page. So the full program's up there for anyone to have a look at. And so as well as the keynote sessions, we're planning to stream as many of the sessions from the main theatre, and they're all indicated on the programme. So if you want to tune in to any of those sessions, you can just click on the link in the programme and have a look at those. And the recordings for all the sessions are up immediately as well. So even if you can't get away to look at something as it happens, you can always go back to something. So there's no delay in the recording going up. And also, as I mentioned, we've got our social media helpers, Lorna and Rich, who will be trying to give a real sense of the conference as well through the hashtag for the conference, which is #AltC, and they'll be tweeting away from the Alt Twitter account. If you are on Twitter, a lot of our members and delegates are on Twitter as well. So I think last year we had 15,000 tweets over 3 days, and I go to quite a few technology conferences, and none of them really compete with us in volume. And I think whilst there's a lot of volume, there's also a lot of really high quality resources, links, thoughts, reflections, debates going on via Twitter. So tuning into those can be a good way to engage as well. And as Sheila and Martin mentioned, we've got the VC or the V-Connecting sessions going on, and we'll put more details about those as we get those.
Brilliant. That sounds great. I look forward to listening, because I'll probably huff stuff some of the YouTubes, which, if anybody else listening is a podcast person, it's a wonderful service that allows you to create podcasts from any audio you find online, and it will even rip YouTube nicely into audio and add it to a podcast for you. That's just a wee personal aside there. Anybody else, is there anything else you want to say to sort of round up or anything you've missed out?
I suppose we should mention another really exciting thing about our annual conference are our annual awards. So we have the awards for the Learning Technologist of the Year and the Learning Technology Team of the Year, and as Maren said, the new Research Award. So I don't know if Martin Weller or Maren want to maybe say a little bit more about that.
Oh, that's a great idea, Sheila. Yes, because even if you can't come to the conference, if you want to see whom the judging panel, chaired by Martin Weller, have chosen as the finalists this year, you can go to the conference website that Martin mentioned earlier, and then you can vote for your favorite. I'm not sure how many hundreds of votes we've already had, but voting is definitely hot this year, and you can vote until the 12th of September what they're doing, and they are really diverse projects, from student video support assistants and their project to gaming for graduates, and also research into student using dashboards, and also HEUK strategies for technology enhanced learning. So there's a whole wealth of different projects to choose from, and you can vote for your own favorite, and the winner will be announced on the 12th of September. I think, Martin Weller, does that cover it?
Yeah, just to say, this was the first year we ran the research awards, because usually the learning, so we still do the Learning Technology of the Year, which is kind of much more practitioner based. And we're never sure kind of how a new award will go, but the entries were amazing, really good quality stuff. And so that was really rewarding. And I think that's going to be a mainstay for us now. So very excited to unveil the winner for that, which I won't do now.
Narrowly avoided giving everything away.
I can say I'm the numbers guy, and we've received as many votes so far as we did for the all of last year. So it's going to be a bumper voting. So it's free to vote. You can vote via Twitter or via email or even both. So see what you like and share what you like.
Brilliant. I mean, it does look good. Again, another place to find out more things if you don't, you know, that you can actually read about and find out about the different awards. The whole conference looks like a huge amount of goodies for people interested in technology and education, and a huge amount of work for you guys. And I must say, you sound quite relaxed about it, so delighted to have had you all on EduTalk tonight. I'm sure anybody listening will be fascinated, will have learned something new and things to look out for in the future. So can I just say thank you very much for giving us your time, and all the best of luck with the conference.
Thank you, John. It's been a pleasure. And thank you for allowing us to share information about our conference too.
Yeah, it's brilliant.